We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. Thank you for joining us today for our energy and sustainability meeting. Can we get a roll call, please?
Powerful Independent Puya Indian. City of Blythe.
Here.
City of Cathedral City.
Present.
City of Coachella.
Present.
Coachella Valley Water District. City of Desert Hot Springs.
Present.
Imperial Irrigation District. City of Indian Wells.
Present.
City of Indio.
Present.
City of La Quinta.
Present.
Mission Springs Water District.
Present.
City of Palm Desert.
Here.
City of Palm Springs.
Here.
City of Rancho Mirage.
Here.
Riverside County District 4.
Here.
Torres Martinez, Desert Cuya Indio. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. We'll move on to the pledge. Ms. Evans, would you please lead us in the pledge?
Be honored. Please stand. Babel, place your hand over your heart and let's salute the greatest flag in the world. Ready to begin.
Thank you, Ms. Evans. Move on to our public comments. Do we have any public comments on agenda items?
Here, have not received it.
All right, thank you. We move on to Commissioner and director announcements. And then we have one from our supervisor. Or do you have a comment on the dust?
Not right now. I'm going to wait till later.
Gotcha.
You could do it now or later. We did put it on the agenda for you to brief the committee.
Okay,
on
very quickly, then I guess
on your I won't take very long. But we've obviously had the discussion in the past around the issue of dust. Ongoing issue of dust, and we just had another storm about a week ago and impacted quite a bit of our area. And honestly, I mean, it was terrible. I didn't even go outside. I tried to stay inside as much as possible. And obviously, can you imagine? I mean, we live here and we're supposed to be kind of used to it. Can you imagine folks that are visiting? Then I'm sure they don't appreciate it, they don't like it, they probably hate it, and obviously it's going to impact them from coming down to our area and, quite frankly, hurting the economy, if you will, aside from the fact that it's a public health concern. So we were scheduled to have a dust summit some time ago. It didn't work out. It was difficult to try to get as many people there as possible. We are working on some folks. And obviously, AKMD is going to play a role. CBAT is going to play a role. I really want to do everything possible to get all of you engaged, to have a full room, because, you know, the reason why I actually canceled it was because I didn't know the amount of people that were showing, meaning there was no RSVP list, and I didn't know if we were going to have a representative, at least one from every city, from every jurisdiction. And, or from, for that matter, CBB, for example, or ag or what have you. So I want to make sure that we have as many people as possible, fill up the room and really have a thoughtful, thorough conversation on what's going on when it comes to dust in our area. And I think it's going to be important that you're all there. So stay tuned. We were looking at May. Doesn't look like it's going to be May. Summer is, I think, a little too warm. So we may be shooting for the fall. Nonetheless, though, we'll take a look to see how we can make this work.
Chair, if I might add by way of introduction, if I might, for those that aren't aware, Supervisor Perez does represent Riverside County on South Coast Air Quality Management District. I know 99% of you know that. Perhaps there is some that are watching. And it's really an important role. It's a role that... the county supervisor of the 4th District has had since the times of Roy Wilson.
Yes, right.
And I point that out because South Coast is focused on the South Coast. And they certainly focus their attention appropriately in the Coachella Valley. But most of the resources are, of course, in the L.A. Basin. And it's great to have a county supervisor representing this air basin at South Coast Air Quality Management District. So I want to acknowledge that with the supervisor, and we chat often on air quality issues, and I certainly pledge our staff support on any sort of dust summit and working with South Coast to get the word out on dust situation. And I do want to remind all of you, this is an issue that I've certainly been passionate about it was this time last year that we had some of the worst dust ever the day Stagecoach started, the Stagecoach Music Festival. So having people come out, camp, set up their RVs in some of the worst dust conditions we've ever faced was a horrible way for some people to be introduced to the Coachella Valley. And while conditions seem to be improving a little bit, last week reminded us in relatively low winds that this could happen again, just as hundreds of thousands of people are coming out to the Coachella Valley. So
yeah,
I look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Tom. Just very quick, if I may add, you know, I've been on AQB now for quite a bit of years. I want to say maybe since 2017, let's just say 28. And I noticed, though, the course of my tenure, there's been more of an emphasis as far as our area is concerned, which is great. I don't know to what degree in the past there was one. I mean, obviously, I think you're right. Obviously, we're talking about different counties that AQD is part of, Orange County, San Bernardino County, LA County, obviously Riverside County, but this specific area, you know, has not really maybe has had the attention. I think we're getting it now, and we've been receiving it quite a bit, and the staff's been very open-minded about it, and I appreciate that. So we definitely have a strong voice, not because I'm on there, but because I think that all of us combined have made it a point to be heard. And with that said, I'm happy to say Grace Garner is also representing me on AQMD. So if you can't get a hold of me, call Grace. And obviously you all know Grace. She is also a councilwoman for the city of Palm Springs. And she's been going to some of the meetings here locally. And then Guillermo Gonzalez, he's actually my consultant at the AQMD level up in the Diamond Bar area. So we're definitely trying to figure things out, but I just wanted to bring it to your attention.
Supervisor, may I?
Sure.
So one of the things we've talked about this so much, and other agencies have talked about it too, we talk about the impact on the economy and on how it hurts people and slugs cars and all this. I don't want us to forget the effect it has on children who don't have cars to go get into. They walk home from school.
That's right.
And kids who are, you know, in their backyards. And I know as a mother, I got my kids out of the house as much as I could. So, you know, it's just something I want to be front of mind that we can speak for ourselves, but let's speak for those who can't.
You're right. I mean, you could still walk home, right?
Yeah,
or
that's
walk
right.
To school.
And the teachers still let you out to play in the playground. Yeah. Because during that time, they grade papers and do other.
Yeah, gotcha.
I hear you. I think Tom answered the question, but I really want to be certain that I understand who's in charge here. Is AQMD in charge? I mean, I appreciate the fact that you're putting on this summit. I think that's a great idea. But who is in charge? Is it AQMD?
Of what specifically in charge of?
Of
air quality issues?
Yes, doing something about our terrible air quality here in the Coachella Valley.
To the degree that we can, yes. Now let staff answer that, meaning we have AQMD staff here.
But I mean, it's not the county, it's not CBAG.
That is correct.
It's not the state of California. It's AQMD. It's AQMD, and you are our, as you've indicated for many years, our representative. Good.
That's
okay,
correct.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I think they're going to present, and eventually they could probably address some of that as well.
Did want to let people know, too, tonight there will be a lecture at UC Riverside talking about dust issues in the region as well and how the salt and sea drying up is affecting those issues.
Oh, that's, yeah,
that'll be 6 o'clock tonight, free lecture at UC Riverside here in Palm Desert. Go ahead.
If I may, and we talked about this last year, the Desert Healthcare District has planned their second annual Environmental Health Summit, and that's for this September. They held one last September. 250, 300 people attended. They had AQMD there. They had both health experts and environmental experts that addressed it. And it, to save the county time, I would think a collaboration would be most appropriate.
Yes.
They also recently allocated $1 million to nonprofit organizations to mitigate air quality issues with their respective areas. And if it's a matter of encouraging some support for a study to fund what AQMD doesn't seem to be able to
validate in terms of the air quality and how it's changed for our specific area. That might be a collaboration. They've got plenty of money to help do that. They're
that's a great idea.
It's already planned. There's, you know, they're working on sponsorships, speakers, and that would be an opportunity for you to be right in that and save the coordination. They've got a facility.
That's a great idea, and I do know that staff is going to talk. Well, I'm not sure they are, but I'm going to ask them about a MATES study and potentially how that could be part of the issue that we're talking about when it comes to dust that's in the air that can have an impact, potentially can have an impact on us when it comes to the public health. So I'm hoping, I know we're here to talk about water heaters and furnaces, but, you know, people are interested in all these other items. So hopefully staff will be able to touch base on that.
Opening up for AQMP real quick to address some questions. Go ahead. Yeah.
So I have Sarah Reese from Deputy Executive Office of Planning, Rural Development and Implementation at AQMD. My division is in charge of air quality planning for the whole region. A couple of points I want to make is that and we do still track actively what's going on in Coachella Valley. Did see the dust storms recently. They are fairly typical to what we expect this time of year, but we do see that there's an increase in what we call a total suspended particulate. And so when we're looking at air quality issues, we're really focused on the types of pollutants that we inhale that get in our lungs and cause health effects. But there's also particles out there that are bigger than what we can inhale. And that's what we seem to be seeing here. And so it's one of the things why we want to pull this dust summit together so we can look at all of the issues that are going into contributing to this. Because we hear you when you say that you're seeing things different. Like, we're not seeing it in our monitoring data, because our monitoring data is focused on the stuff that we inhale. And so those are the really small particles. And that doesn't seem to have changed. But we do hear the complaints of what everybody's been saying. And so it does appear to be these bigger particles. And so there's a lot of different factors that go into that in terms of development, in terms of, you know, climate change, in terms of other factors. And so we're pulling together folks from academia, from different parts of the federal government, and from the other agencies that all have a hand in this, so we can, you know, bring everybody together and basically have a conversation about what's going on and what we observe.
Thank you. And I love the idea of maybe we collaborate.
Definitely. It's already underway, so just get on the agenda and be a guest speaker.
Sure.
And one quick point, if I may, on the MATE study, that's a air toxic study that we do every several years. It's an incredibly comprehensive study. That study is focused on inhalable air toxics, so dust that's bigger than inhalable, that would not be a part of that study.
So on that point, though, that doesn't mean just because it's not impacting the lungs that there's not a health risk to that piece. Not to mention the economical impact and what it does to the resort destination that we rely on, 1 in 5 jobs in this valley. So that's what we learned the last visit was the PM10 and the 2.5 versus the 33s or whatever it was, which are bigger. I think that we could still indicate through a study that from allergens and things that doesn't necessarily mean they're inhaled, but they're still making impacts of health conditions that might not be permanent lung damage over time that I feel is being missed. And granted, it was abandoned years ago because it didn't seem like that was an important particulate to study, mm-hmm. but there's other pieces to that we should bring back and validate again.
So I will say EPA has studied this for many, many, many decades. TSP was originally listed as a criteria air pollutants. And what EPA has found out over time is that it's really these smaller particles, that there's a threshold at PM10 where stuff becomes inhalable versus not. Does that mean that you could have some big particles that have big chemical, different chemical components, and so you have like skin contact where they can get health risks, or oral contact because, you know, it's basically going through your mucous membranes? Mm-hmm. Perhaps, but EPA in their research have determined that there aren't any health effects associated with total suspended particulates.
But and when that was determined, Sarah, how many years back was that, or is that recent, or was that how old is that study?
Actually, when EPA reviews particulate matter standards, they look at the whole suite. So when they do their comprehensive review to establish federal air quality standards, which happens every 5 years, they look at the whole suite of data. And so they made the determination
back in 1990, the TSP was not did not have health effects associated with it. There was really the smaller particles, but that doesn't mean they necessarily stopped looking at that.
So that was 1990, though.
Right.
And maybe they're still looking at it, but 1990 is quite some time ago. And, you know, I don't know what areas they're targeting either. Obviously, you know, this area here, when you talk about Windy Point, as you come in, you know, Desert Hot Springs, Palm Springs area, and then obviously all the way down to the North Shore, South Sea area, you definitely see it more in the air than ever before, as far as I'm concerned, growing up here. So I still think that it's important that we do what we can to try to figure out a way, if EPA doesn't do it, that we probably do it, do some sort of, you know, study to figure out what is suspended in that air, and how much of an impact potentially it is having on our lungs, on our public health. So I just want to make sure we just don't let it go just because EPA said, back in 1990, there's nothing there.
The science is pretty definitive. I will leave it at that. But the science is pretty definitive.
I'm going to take the floor. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. That was the storm in 23. Okay, and if anybody doesn't agree with it, I'm going to that is what's caused a lot of this. We had compacted dust. We had water trails that have changed dramatically in Desert Hot Springs and throughout there. The dust, even the common folk resident that knows absolutely nothing about this has said ever since the storm, I would hope that this dust summit would have something in there about suspending federal regulations or state regulations or whatever we can do and allow for, you know, construction site PM10 type of control in environmental areas and put them out there and say, just, you know, instead of just letting the sand go or whatever. I mean, it's that in itself. I mean, I've been out here since 97 and I've not seen anything as bad since 23. That is the elephant in the room. So why don't we just talk about it and make that known? So we have to talk about in this dust summit thing about, as a group, possibly recommending the suspension of certain environmental regulations that are out there now, allowing us to mitigate these things so we don't have the dust. I mean, I know the history of Palm Springs. If they could use PM10 mitigation, you know, 200 yards in on Gene Autry and Hinden, that would resolve some of that problem. In other areas, I'm sure, I know we in Desert Hot Springs would like to use that, but we've got areas. So I just want to make sure that we point that out that somewhere in this discussion. I hope that we're going to also include, maybe we need to recommend that some of these regulations get suspended while we get it under control.
What kind of projects are you thinking that would slow down the dust there?
Well, I mean, you know, just look at what we require right now for PM10 on construction sites. They have to put the I forgot what the name of that stuff is, but
the spray starch.
Yeah, the spray starch. You know, if you were to put that in some of these areas, that could impact some of the dust area. You know, you're looking at, let's see, you got a massive area, but a lot of times it's just a small trail area that's dusting up because it was kicked up because the water kicked it up, right? The storm kicked it up, the wind kicked it up. It was compacted for so long. Well, maybe there, or by a roadway and you go in 200 yards and you do something like that. Those little kinds of things can make a world of difference, you know, type of thing. And so, again, I mean, this isn't really the forum to have in-depth, but I think if we're going to have this discussion at a summit, let's seriously look at these things and not be afraid to tackle regulations and say, maybe our region needs to have these things suspended and don't compare us or put us in the category as Long Beach or San Diego or Santa Barbara.
Right. In the city of Palm Desert, we've done palm mulch for a lot of our sandy areas, and that seems to work, but you have to continually do it, and it gets expensive.
Sorry, what do you call it?
It's palm mulch.
Okay.
They mulch up the palms, yes. Yeah. And it's a heavier ground cover.
Right.
The other thing that I've heard a lot about recently at UC Riverside is the air quality impacts of the Salton Sea from the water itself. I'm not sure if HMD is involved in those Yes.
Yeah, you are in all those conversations. And that's a slightly different issue because that is stuff that is inhalable. It's smaller particulates and that there's a chemical composition of the lake itself so that there are some different components that people do breathe and there are health impacts associated with that. So it's a slightly different issue. But we are very involved in those conversations.
Okay. Yeah, that would be something that I would like to see included as well in those best conversations where we're looking at that because as the sea dries up, we know there's different issues that are going to be coming out of the declining health of the Salton Sea. Mr. Reed.
This is really helpful. And Supervisor, I want to thank you for taking the lead on this thing. But it seems to me it's important that we listen to the experts. I mean, we all have our opinions, but we don't really know what we're talking about. I mean, listen, but there are people who do, and I would encourage the AQMD, first of all, if they're in charge, I hope they are a co-sponsor or an equal sponsor to the project, because without them, we get nothing done. All we do is talk. Mm-hmm. So you've got to get them thoroughly engaged in this and then put together true experts, people who know what's going on. I think the major difference between this and everything else that AQMD does is this is caused by Mother Nature. They can't find somebody for doing this. They can't get a court order to stop people from doing things that they've been doing for, 40 years? They've been going after the polluters. They've done a great, fabulous, fantastic job of going against human beings that are creating pollution. This was done by Mother Nature. So what the hell do you do? How do you do it? And I don't know the answer to that, but I'd love to learn. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Tough question for sure. Thank you. Thank you for raising those concerns. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, thank you all for the input. We'll go ahead and move on to our discussion items. And we have 7A, update on proposed amendments to South Coast. Oh, sorry. Missed the consent calendar. We just have the approval of the minutes for February 13th on our consent calendar with the motion.
Laquinta moves approval.
Motion from Laquinta and
second
from Rancho Mirage. Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Rice?
Yes.
Thank you. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Right. Motion passes. Thank you. And we'll move on to our discussion item 7A, update on proposed amendments to South Coast Air Quality Management District's rules 1111 and 1121. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me. I'm Heather Barr, Planning and Rules Manager of the South Coast Air Quality Management District, here to present on proposed amended rules 1111 and 1121. So these rules apply to residential space and water heating appliances. I think your water heater, your furnace. We have been working on these proposed amendments to these rules for about 2 years now. We did initially propose to have a future effective zero emission target. So in the future, you would not be able to buy anything but a zero emission unit. But there was a lot of concern about affordability, about choice, and about if we were really getting the word out about our proposal. So we have spent time going to different cities, different COGs, different agencies to talk about the proposals, got a lot of feedback, got over 12,000 comment letters. And based on all that feedback, we are proposing to make a change, which I wanted to talk about today. So our original version, as I mentioned, it was upon replacement. So when you had to replace your furnace or your water heater in the future, you would have to switch to a zero emission unit. But we have removed that. We no longer have a mandate in our proposed rules. So for the new concept, we're taking the focus from the installer really to the manufacturer of these appliances, and we're establishing sales targets. So starting in 2027 with a 30% sales target to sell zero emission units, and that target will go up over time, but we will still allow the choice of gas units to be sold within our jurisdiction. We are proposing a mitigation fee to go along with those gas units that are sold to really help encourage the transition and help us fund our Go Zero program that will incentivize the transition to these clean technologies. So I just want to talk a little bit about our proposed mitigation fee. We're proposing about a 1% fee for every furnace or water heater that's sold in our jurisdiction. So that's $100 for a furnace, $50 for a water heater. We do intend to have a higher fee if manufacturers go over those targets. So they are allowed to sell beyond that target, but there will just be a higher mitigation fee for those. This slide has changed possibly from what's in the agenda. This is a recent change. We have lowered the mitigation fee for our water heaters. So the water heaters will be $250, while the the furnaces will be 500. Again, we're going to take those funds and use them to fund our Go Zero program and put those monies back out into the community to really help with to help transition to zero emission technologies. I'll talk a little bit about that program at the end. So about the compliance targets, they are separate targets, so that each manufacturer will have to meet a target for the space heating as well as for the water heating. They can meet that with new or existing buildings. As I mentioned, they can go beyond those targets. They just have a higher fee. And we are applying that mitigation fee at the end of the sales year to try to deter that pass through to the consumers. So how we think this change really addresses the concerns. When it comes to affordability, now that consumer will have a choice. They'll have a choice on what unit they want to install in their home. So when there are instances where it is expensive, they still have that gas unit that they can install. And as far as consumer choice, that's built into it. We still maintain that consumer choice, so you can buy which unit you want to buy. And then when it comes to concerns about, you know, is the zero emission technology ready? You know, can the grid handle this? Having that longer off-ramp that allows a slower transition will really help with both of those concerns. Just wanted to talk a little bit about the cost and the affordability for those consumers who do choose to go with the zero emission technologies. And there's some good news. When you have when you're replacing your furnace and your AC, like your HVAC system, those costs are about equivalent. They're about the same. So, and that's kind of telling when you look at sales trends nationwide. Heat pumps now are outselling gas furnaces, and it's likely because of that cost. They're very efficient as well, so they can be cheaper to operate as well. So there is some good news there. However, if you only have a furnace, say you do not have a AC in your house, there is a big premium to pay. There is $8,000 more, but then again, you get the benefit of having air conditioning. So we do know some people will likely make that choice, replace their furnace with a heat pump. And in those cases, it's around $8,000. On the water heating side, heat pump water heaters are a newer technology. So those do come with a higher cost. They're around for a full project cost, they're around $2,000 more. However, there's a lot of incentives out there to encourage the transition to these technologies, as well as, like I mentioned, the operational savings because they're very efficient. Just want to talk a little big picture here on our air quality management plan. You know, our region does have the worst air quality in the nation, and our agency drafts these plans periodically. It's really our blueprint for how we're going to achieve our national ambient air quality standards. And it just finds the fastest way to try to transition to get to those zero to get to those air quality standards. And our latest plan did require us to get like 67% emission reductions. And it does include reductions in every sector from industrial to commercial, and yes, even residential appliances. And it does rely on the transition to zero emission technologies wherever that's feasible. So then the need for these particular rules, like why are we talking about residential building appliances? And when I'm talking about emissions and lowering emissions, I'm really talking about NOx emissions. NOx is the driver in our region for high ozone levels in the summer, as well as PM2.5 levels in the winter. And when you look at all these appliances, there's around 10 million in our region. And that baseline of those is 6.8 tons of NOx per day. So that's very significant. When you look at other large sources of these NOx emissions, like all of our utilities in our region, that's 2 to 3 ton per day. Petroleum refineries, we've pushed them down, we've regulated them down to 4 ton per day. If you look at all the passenger vehicles on our roads, that's 7 tons per day. So this really is a big source of emissions. We are proposing, even with the slower transition, but on full implementation to get around 6 ton per day reduction. And that would be the second largest emission reduction from any rule that the district has done in decades, second only to our petroleum refinery rule. And we will include a technology check-in just to make sure things are going okay. Along with the sales targets, the manufacturers will have to report to us. So we'll have a really clear picture on how those targets are being made, how the sales are going, and it will just give us an opportunity to report back and make any changes if needed. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about is our Go Zero program. We're very excited. We're working on launching this kind of in parallel with the rules, because we do know that cost can be a barrier to transitioning to these zero emission technologies. So we do have a pilot program that will be launching soon. It's seeded with $21 million in funding. We're going to try to get at least 75% of that into our overburdened communities, the areas that they really do need that extra help to try to transition to these zero emission technologies. We have five different parts of this. Three of them are rebates. But in addition to that, we have outreach. We have two different third-party contractors that are going to focus on outreach in all four counties of our jurisdiction. Really want to get the word out that this funding is available, about these technologies, as well as the rule changes that are coming. And the other big piece of it is installer training, so that our workforce is ready. And again, we're going to do that in all four counties to make sure that our workforce is ready for these changes. When it comes to the rebates, we do have three different aspects. We have the single family rebate, which is funded at, I think, $9 million, and that'll be $1,000 to $3,000 per appliance, with that higher number being for the overburdened communities. We also have incentives for multifamilies, properties to incentivize them to transition to these technologies, as well as a small business part. So for our next steps, some of our last steps, so last Tuesday, we did release our draft rule language, as well as our supporting documentation. We do have a public hearing that says subject to change. It has been changed. It is now a June public hearing. And we're hoping to launch our Go Zero program shortly, hoping for a spring launch. This last link just includes staff contacts, as well as links to get to our clearinghouse. We've been trying to do a really big effort on getting all this information available to our website, on our website, in a very public-facing, public-friendly way to try to get this word out. With that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Ms. Nelson, sorry to put you on the spot, but I wanted to see if you have any input on the impacts that this could have on health and indoor air quality for our families.
That's a good question. Mike, that's a really good question. I'm not familiar with the technologies myself, so okay. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, by way of introduction, Dr. Emily Nelson lives in the Coachella Valley, has for a long time, and has supported this committee on technical air quality issues for now a couple of decades. Emily, thank you for doing so.
You're welcome. Yes, I've been advising this committee really for 36 years, and I'm born and raised in Coachella Valley, and you're right, there is an allergy component. It may not be inhalable, and that's a separate issue from what the presentation is, right. But I have spoken with, and we had a nice conversation with Cal EPA, the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, they did a 10-year study looking at data from our three hospitals 35 years ago, and are very interested in updating that based on this new data, especially once South Coast collects a year's worth of that TSP data. That'll be completed probably in June. So there are next steps that can happen, and I'm very happy to help with any of that. I was the chairwoman of our PM10 technical working group that this committee had back when we were trying to attain the standard. We actually met the standard, and EPA chose not to redesignate us, but, you know. So very familiar with our air quality issues, and I have COPD, so it's kind of a personal thing as well. Anyway, I don't know the technology and how it would impact our indoor air pollution, but that is a really interesting. It'd be fun to monitor. Have they done that kind of analysis?
For indoor air pollution, yeah. Coming from heat pumps or coming from natural gas?
Well, just reduction. Yeah.
I know there has been studies for sure on the emission impacts of natural gas combustion inside the house and contributing to asthma. I don't know about for heat pumps are typically, you know, located in a garage or in an outside space. So we're really talking about furnaces and water heaters for this role.
And I'm not as familiar with our ozone data for Coachella Valley, but I know that our primary pollutant is the PM10. So it sounds like when the district develops rules, it's for the entire jurisdiction that you're responsible for, the whole four counties and our valley. But it's lovely that you have the choice that you're giving people at this point, because our ozone usually is brought to us, it's transported to us. The emissions that happen in Santa Monica end up hitting Riverside at noon and hit us about 4 or 5 p.m. So, and then overnight, thankfully, the ozone breaks back down because we don't have a lot of new generation. Now, unfortunately, we have some peaker plants and things that are adding some NOx to our environment, but it'd be interesting to update that in terms of I know you've done the ozone studies for Coachella Valley as well. It's always monitored. But the burden to our community to have to improve our technology seems disproportionate compared to what maybe really needs to happen on the west side of the South Coast. That's just an opinion of mine. That's not a scientific analysis, but it's something to be considering in terms of, you know, requiring us to meet the same standards that folks in Santa Monica.
Certainly, NOx is a regional pollutant.
I mean, the reason that AQMD was formed itself was because our neighbors to the east got tired of all the pollution from LA counties and Orange County coming out this way. So regulating this on a regional basis is how we really do need to control these emissions to lower our ozone levels for everybody who lives and breathes in our area.
I'll open up the other director comments.
I have two comments. First is a question / comment. There's been very little discussion about your department's discussions with the gas manufacturers for the appliances. Are they just not even able to be given the chance to develop leak-free appliances? There's no partnership with grant money to go to the manufacturers to stop the leaking versus forcing the residents to potentially change? That's kind of a question / comment because I haven't seen any collaboration. And when I attempted to get information from our local provider, they were told they couldn't provide information to any of us because of this decision, that they couldn't provide any of their data that I could put in public record requests, but that I couldn't get data from them because they couldn't participate in this particular issue's discussion, which I felt they should be at the table. It's affecting them a great deal. The second issue, and this will go for a lot of communities in our valley, those who have homes that were built in 1940, 50, 60, early 70s, in order for them to make some of these changes, they're going to have to update a lot of their electrical grid, which will take them out of the grandfathering that they're in, which will cause them to have to expend a lot of money for replumbing not just the gas, but electrical. And there's no money in there to give those people an opportunity to make that upgrade. So I feel like you're not really, it says that it's helping disadvantaged communities, but it's not, because those disadvantaged communities have a lot of the older homes that don't have, that are the bigger problem. And there isn't enough funding to go to actually make it viable for them to fix their problem. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate those comments. And really, you know, when we look at median costs, it is very cost effective, especially on the space side. But we do understand there's going to be those instances where it's going to be very expensive for them to transition to the zero. That is really the main driver on why we changed our proposal, to allow for those homes that have very expensive conversions that they can opt to stay with that gas technology. So really appreciate that feedback. There are other organizations that are working on direct install programs where they will try to cover the cost of everything to do that transition. Ours is a cost per widget. We are trying to partner with those organizations so that we can help at least put in our amount of funding to help them reach more homes, to be able to really help those people that it will be expensive to try to transition. When it comes to the manufacturers of these appliances, there's about 10 major manufacturers. They all sell both gas and electric appliances. We have worked with them. These rules were adopted in 1978, so we've been working with them. We have a long history of working with them. They have periodically worked with them to lower the NOx. So it really is the NOx emissions from combusting that fuel that leads to the emissions and our air quality issues. We've worked with them over the years. They have reduced those NOx emissions. And we went back to them this time and we said, okay, you know, now you're at 14. Can we get you maybe at 7 or 5? Is there a way to lower those NOx emissions? They were really like, well, we have zero already. So we don't want to spend that time and that money to create a new lower NOx burning unit when we already have zero. Like, let us use our resources to help get the zero emission off the ground instead of having to design yet another burner to get lower NOx when they were already at zero.
Follow, because it's not just those expenses. It's also now you're putting a family who maybe had a $30 gas bill and was able to heat their home, putting that onto the electrical grid, which is now an $800 a month bill. I have people in my district that have trouble deciding between paying their $40 water bill and their $40 gas bill, and their electric, they just
they can't pay. So this is a much bigger issue that I don't feel the policy is really addressing.
So just about the operating costs, these heat pumps are very efficient, like three to four times more efficient than a gas unit. So even in our region, we do have higher rates of electricity. It's the efficiency of these appliances that actually lead to having lower costs than running that gas furnace.
If I could comment?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. And in my research for the last couple of months, I have reached out to the gas company and have been told they're not allowed to share their studies. And so I've had to try to use an AI and other sources to see if there's studies that dispute the health benefits of implementing these two rules. And so there's data out there that says it's going to be negligible. So my question here to all of us is, I'm not convinced there's going to be a noticeable health benefit.
Right. Again, we do have the worst air quality in the nation, and we need all the emission reductions that we can get. The South Coast.
I think it's the dust that is causing us our biggest concern.
So regionally, our biggest driver, we're not meeting federal and state standards for ozone and PM2.5, and that really is driven by these NOx emissions. South Coast AQMD, we control, we have the authority over area sources and permitted sources. So the area sources are these small non-permitted sources of emissions. And again, when it comes to these appliances, having 10 million of them, it really does add up. The emissions that are coming from these appliances is equivalent to all the vehicles that are in the passenger vehicles that are within our region. It is a really significant source of emissions. It will be a big step forward to help our air quality. Not to say that this alone, that this one step alone is going to get us to meeting our standards, but it's a very important and a very big step.
Ms. Nancy Ross first, and then we'll move to the interview.
So I don't hear anybody talking about what a transition to electricity looks like. I know our developers sometimes can't build right away because there's not electricity to come to where they want to build. None of us are meeting our RENA numbers. None of us are. If there's a city that is, I stand corrected, but I don't think any of us are. And so when we're talking about additional building and supplying it completely with electricity and moving forward to more and more and more and more, it's just not tenable. What we have heard as of today isn't going to work, not on a long-term basis. And you talk about increased fees for low-income cities and neighborhoods, and it doesn't sound tenable. So is there, please, if I'm missing something, share the wealth, because I feel like I'm in some kind of a crazy land right now.
Go ahead, Ms.
Reed. Following up on what Nancy was talking about, Washington seems concerned that there isn't going to be enough electricity to go around in the country with AI and crypto and all of these other activities that are voracious users of electricity. And I'm wondering if you have looked at where this electricity is going to come from, because now they're talking about reopening coal plants. Mm-hmm. And so if we're trading gas or coal plants, I couldn't even begin to guess what the answer. Well, I know, could guess what the answer is, but I don't know what the answer is. But have you looked at the source of where the electricity is going to come from? And are we actually exacerbating the problem if that's going to come from coal?
Thank you. Go ahead.
So you're not on the crazy train, Nancy. I might be in the seat right next to you. We still didn't get a solution to what this group talked about last time, and that was those who are most marginalized are, you know, this $20 million, how long is that going to last? Let alone, who's going to go out and buy an $8,000 heat pump and furnace or whatever that might be? We can't even get parents today to sign permission slips with their address on it because they're afraid that they're going to get tracked down by ICE.
Yep.
How can we think we're going to get them to fill out paperwork to get a rebate And the electrical issue is a huge issue. We don't even have enough of grid power to have electric charging stations at the city hall. And that's duplicated in many of our condo units that were built in the 70s. They don't have the capacity. So needing to increase capacity is going to cost huge dollars. And I have no idea where that's going to come from. And the cities aren't going to be able to afford that.
Yeah, and I think on my end, you know, some of the concerns that we're hearing is first the need for electrical panels to accommodate any of these improvements, and that we don't have a plan for that that we can see at this point. The other part is just that in general, the risk for our low-income residents to be able to afford any type of these mitigation fees. You know, I think when you mentioned the first step of the $100 on the gas and $50 for the, I think it was $100 for the furnace, $50 on the gas, it seems a little bit more reasonable, right? As a first step, when you go into the $500 and then you're going to increase, that's going to be passed on to the consumer, right? $500. Right to the consumer, and I think that is getting a little bit too ambitious for us, because if it's either that or the $8,000, you know, they're probably still going to buy the gas furnace and lose $500 more. And so I just think we're not seeing a clear pathway to actually providing cleaner air for our communities with this program at the moment. We do, you know, we do want to see, I personally believe that there are the air quality concerns indoors with gas burning appliances. I know that is an issue, but how do we incentivize the industry to bring those savings for us at the retail point, right? When somebody goes to buy those appliances and they see, okay, I can afford this one or I can afford this one. How do we bring those prices down without putting our low-income communities at such risks? And so I think that's the kind of clarity that we're looking for. I'll open it up again to any other comments, Mr. Dirkloss.
You know, I'm sure we all remember the letter that came out in the summertime from our governor who said, do not charge electric vehicles between 2 and 5. Remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. I have that at home. It's our grid system is so antiquated and so out of whack that it's not capable of handling additional loads as it is. And we have to do that. We want to do this. I mean, this to me is, it's a feel good thing. It touches the surface. It's kind of cute and everything. Honestly, there's just two simple things that I would do. I'd say, here's $21 million. I'd put it in an account. And if you voluntarily want to upgrade your system, you're eligible for a tax rebate or a discounted rebate from it. If you are a builder that's building something brand new, you can get some of the rebate from this thing. That's it.
The white people with means are going to be the ones who benefit.
But I think the problem that's going to come there is that then you wouldn't have the mitigation fees to fund the future of that program, right? And because I was thinking on the same direction. But then there will be no funding to...
So we don't have it. Exactly. It's that simple. I mean, it's, you know...
And just to follow with what you were saying... And the health standard here, if the reason is because of health risk and air quality indoor and out, then it's a choice only for those who can afford it. So those who can't afford it have to sacrifice their health, and that's a decision they should be forced to make. If it truly is health-based, it shouldn't be a decision for anyone. If it isn't health-based, then it shouldn't be up to any of us at this table or anywhere else to make any decision for anybody else. I just don't understand. It seems very, I would piggyback on what you said. It looks pretty, but it doesn't seem to have any actual benefit from what I see. You
know, one thing that I did ask, unfortunately, they weren't able to join us today, but I would like Hark to come because they have some of the more extensive health data from our communities. And so I did invite them to join. It was a little bit of a late request, but I would like them to join us on the next conversation about this and maybe present, you know, what their understanding is of the risk of having NOx emissions indoors, right? Because I do think that is a problem. I don't think this is the best solution at the moment. I think we're trying to find the right solutions, right? I don't think we're there just yet, but it is something that we'll have to address either through the health impacts of our kids or through the price of our appliances.
Let's share very quickly. Okay, you bring up car. That's park. Park. Okay. I thought you meant car. No, so no. Let me bring up car.
Okay.
You told her dad.
You California Air problem. Resources Board is what I thought you brought up. And I was going to say that's a whole other animal. And many of the times what the efforts are based on are on what is stemming from what is decided at the state level with CARB. I was once sitting on CARB until I finally got fed up with it. And I'll be very honest with you, because I think with AQMD, at least there is some wiggle room in which we can kind of work with other members to try to meet some sort of balance when we're trying to put together a policy. CARB, I don't see it that way. So I thought you were inviting CARB. I was going to suggest that. Great idea. Because this conversation is a much larger conversation. And it does, I think, require this type of conversation where we actually do have staff from CARB to address some many of the points that you are making. And many times, they're not listening to or hear or, quite frankly, potentially don't care. That's my take. You know, other people don't feel that way, but that's me. So anyways, but I will say that the decision back in the day with AQMD on this specific issue was to pass it where it was going to be a mandate and it was going to be 20 some odd million dollars for incentives. So we obviously knew, and even up at the AQMD level, it was voted down. It was like, I don't remember what the vote count was, but maybe like 11 to 2 or 9 to 2. I can't remember what it was. But with the thought that, okay, rework it, try to think something out. I don't know what that looks like, but try to work on it. I guess what I'm wondering now is, where are the environmentalists on this issue now? And where is the business community on this issue now? What are you hearing from both entities now that there's been this amendment that has taken place?
So the environmental community is not happy about the pivot. They think that we, you know, need to have stronger standards. We need to transition sooner. We essentially established those targets around where the market is today. So when you talk about that $500 fee that is over, we don't anticipate that happening. We're even in our region right now, heat pumps are being sold at around 20 to 30%. So we're establishing those targets close to where we are right now. So we are anticipating that lower fee. The environmentalists really would like us to have much, much higher fees. They want to really strengthen the rule to really, you know, encourage people to transition to the zero emission unit. So we certainly haven't made them happy with our proposed changes, the low fees, the gentle transition. The business community still does have some concerns. However, they recognize that the choice is there and that they will have that ability to transition. And if I can talk a little bit about the grid concerns that were brought up. I mean, our region around, there's almost 90% of the homes in our region already have air conditioning. So if you already have an air conditioner, this isn't adding to the load. In fact, these heat pumps are more efficient. So it'll probably be less load in the summer for your cooling. When it comes to using that heat pump, so the electricity to heat your home, it's not the peak time that you think of with air conditioning. It's usually the temperatures are lowest at the night times in the early mornings. And it's also not as big of a lift to heat our homes just because of our mild climate in our region. So the grid, when it comes to these ACs, transitioning to heat pump, that should not be a concern. The water heating side, that is a little bit of an additional impact on the grid. However, they now have plug-in units that can just plug into a regular wall socket. So the technology is improving very rapidly. There's so much work and focus on heat pumps in the building appliance space. And the $21 million for rebates, we acknowledge that's not enough. Committed, our executive officer committed to increasing those by fivefold to help really get those incentives out to the community. And if this rule is passed with these 1% mitigation fees, that will provide a revenue stream to really help our community to transition. And one other piece that we have for our Go Zero program is an application assistance, because we were worried about people being able to apply for these rebates. And it's not just our rebates, there's other rebates by the state, there's local rebates, there's lots of incentive funding out there. So we want them to be able to stack those different incentive rates so they could lower their upfront costs. So we do have a third party contractor that's going to work just with those low income people to try to help them with the rebate, try to help them get those monies. So we are, you know, trying to find solutions where we hear these concerns.
Look, I may, Mr. Chairman, you know, the recommendation before us was to provide direction on a position, and it appears based on the discussion, our position is not to accept the amendments because it hasn't been determined that the mandates and or mitigation fees, if you don't comply, clearly outweigh what the apparent health benefit is based on the information we've been provided. So I'm not supporting it.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit too early. I think we're definitely open to continuing the work with AQMD and trying to get this to something more feasible for our community. That sounds okay.
2 years in the making, once another two.
Chair?
Joyce?
I'm sorry you're standing there. You're going to take the brunt of it because it's you. But you used the term that we are being encouraged. Many of us are being punished. And there's a big difference. And I just want to keep that in the top of your brain when you talk about this, because encouraging is what rich people get.
Right.
So what is the recommendation? I'm just wondering.
I think at this point is that we
recommend their accepting their amendments by shifting some of the burden on the manufacturers.
Right.
But not that there's still a fee component.
There's no staff recommendation, by the way.
Right.
This is all
right. This is all about
committee.
I think
committee
too soon. I mean, I don't understand why we're even, that's a recommendation.
I don't
know. Sir? No, I know. So I can't vote regardless, I'm being told right now, but I mean, I'm just wondering, are we ready for even a vote on this? I mean, I don't understand why there's a recommendation other than, all right, we've heard them.
Yeah.
Go back to the drawing board.
Yes. I think that's where we're at.
yeah, but I mean, does that require a vote to say, I mean, I think they're hearing,
I guess we would be recommending to the executive committee, right? We don't have
board. We don't want to take a position.
You don't have to take a position. You could provide direction to staff to monitor and come back as the rule is developed. You could send a sternly worded letter. It's up to you.
Okay. And I have another question. Is it possible to hear from the gas company just to eat, knowing that they're biased? I'm just very curious as to what they would say about all of this.
Yeah, sure. Definitely open to hearing that. And I'll also bring in ARC into the conversation to hear more details on the health impacts.
Well, can't we just stipulate that it is probably a problem internally? I mean, you would just assume that, of course, there's a problem.
But how bad is the problem? How urgent is it worth, you know, these measures? Or what is it worth for us? What do we invest into this issue, right? Because if it's costing us millions of dollars at the hospitals, then we do have to consider it on this end as well, right? And start balancing those costs.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, may I suggest that I work with you, the vice chair, and our county supervisor on a letter that captures some of the concerns raised. Yeah, and we draft that, maybe send it out to everybody. And if there's other additional comments we missed, we do it. We pass that along to the district. I'm sure the district's going to be passing along, you know, it has their own notes, but this is a way for you to capture some of the concerns that you've raised.
Sounds good.
And if you want to have a motion to direct staff to do that, you can. Otherwise, I've got my direction, if that's okay with you and the rest of the committee.
Everybody okay?
Am I allowed to do that?
A little head nod.
Yeah. I will say
that.
Thank you.
But I'll hear whatever you write, obviously.
I'll be reading whatever you write.
Yeah, anything we draft can be moved on to the CBAG executive.
Okay, so we come from CBAG, not from the energy and sustainability.
Yes, it would.
Thank you.
Everything.
Thank you so much for answering our questions. Yeah, appreciate you being here.
And for taking the heat, and it wasn't a joke.
No, but if you can solve the dust problem, we will forgive you for all your
sins. In the mind of yours.
All right. Next up, we have Jacob Alvarez with an update on our IREN Energy Fellowship Program.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'll try to keep this brief given the time that we're at already.
Thank you.
Today, I'd like to share a brief update on IREN's Energy Fellowship Program, as well as the connection between our workforce development and public agency sectors. Sorry, let me go back one. The fellowship began, program was launched in 2023 through a partnership with Civic Spark. The partnership allows public agencies to within the IREN area to host a fellow at no cost. The first cycle began in 2023 and ran through August 2024. During that time, there was 11 fellows at 11 host sites that worked on 28 energy projects between them. Most of the projects were energy efficiency related. Some of them had a nexus between energy and other public agency needs. At the end of the first cycle, we pulled the fellows to gauge how IREN could be most helpful in their success, as well as helpful to the future cohorts. And currently, the second cycle is in progress and will complete in August 2025. There are 14 fellows at 12 host sites. Using the information we got from the previous cycle, IREN instituted more touring options, network opportunities, as well as general leadership actions for fellows to take to encourage success and tools for success. There are 7 events scheduled for 2025. Since 2023, there have been 26 projects at 12 agencies that may progress through the public sector's cash for kilowatts, where the IREN Energy Fellows were a key contributor. The projects alone count for 44% of the funds that have been allocated to all of the cash for kilowatts programs, and so far 35% of the energy savings. Additionally, it's going to save approximately about 1 million kilowatt hours a year, 5,000 therms a year, and then 1.1 million in allocated incentives to do those projects. The fellows are given information and resources to share with those host cities, as well as they add to the capacity of those cities to actually do those programs. Bless you. 4 of the 12 agencies have a second year fellow, and currently one of those fellows is going through the hiring process where they'll be kept by the agency as a full-time employee once this cycle, fellowship cycle is done. IREN's hoping to increase the program to 27 fellows at 27 agencies. We're hoping that more agencies will become host sites. We're trying to identify gaps that are keeping them from doing that. There were 400 applications last time, but the number of host agencies was severely limited us reaching our goals. Don't need that part. These agencies need to provide the necessary working equipment and a site supervisor who's willing to support their growth, as well as an understanding of the agency, and all of the other costs and requirements are handled through IREN. In that picture, you have Julia Tang, who's the Palm Springs Fellow. And then currently applications for host sites, which means your cities or water agency, is open from March 20th to May 15th. Fellows applications are from April 7th to June 2nd. Currently, we have consultants who are managing tables at both College of the Desert and Cal State San Bernardino, trying to get more fellows to join. Over the past 2 years, we've had to manage basically 4 applications in our territory, in which 3 of those were fellows, one of them out in Beaumont, and then obviously Palm Springs, and then CVAC. And then there we have our CVAC fellow, Gina Special, and I'll go ahead and hand it to her.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Gina Veschel, and I'm really happy to be here to share the work that I've accomplished as an IREN Fellow at CVAG. For IREN's workforce education and training sector, we provide outreach engagement to talk about each of our program sectors. I will also be sharing my experience as an energy fellow to inspire and recruit the next cycle of fellows for IREN's fellowship program. To join the fellowship, applicants must have a college degree of at least an associate's degree and a strong interest in energy and sustainability. In our territory, we will have conducted about 20 outreach events from now until the end of May, engaging with students in harder to reach and underserved areas. I was also trained by the Energy Coalition to analyze energy consumption data reports, as well as developing energy savings and cost charts for the cities of La Quinta, Indio, and Coachella, which are served by IID. I also have the great opportunity to join my team on for energy audit walkthroughs at the Rancho Mirage Library and Observatory and Palm Desert's City Hall, just to name a few. And I learned so much. I was amazed to see how much facilities save when upgrading their energy systems, like switching over to LED lighting and installing smart thermostats. What I'm currently working on now is amassing decarbonization and weatherization programs provided by our service utility companies that can bring additional energy efficiency resources to our residents and businesses. Being in the fellowship, I gained an invaluable amount of knowledge that will help me grow as a professional, and it's also rewarding to be supporting agency members who make a positive impact to our communities. I will be returning to CVAG for a second term and to be a part of IREN's third fellowship cycle this fall. So this concludes my portion of the presentation, and we are more than happy to answer any questions you may have for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Gina. Thank you for your work here, and thank you for also joining us for next year. We're excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited.
To an SCE territory, I would encourage you all to let your city know that this program is available, so you get a free fellow for multiple years even. So she'll be here for our second year. And then they help you in going and getting those IREN funds, which we have $65 million coming in over the next over 5 years. And so they're there to help you gain some, gather some of those energy efficiency funds and create projects here in your cities.
And for the IRG cities, you're more than welcome to have access to these fellows as well. And they could work on anything. You know, we had actually Gina, she mentioned it on there.
Yeah.
Back when I was here the first time, we had a Desert Cities Energy Partnership, and because it's funded through those dollars, we weren't able to get your electricity data. So with Gina, we were able to kind of go around the whole thing, and she got your energy data, and now we'll be able to give you a whole portfolio of where your energy consumption's at. So there's opportunity there. There's opportunity if Mission Springs or CBWD would like a host of fellow as well. There's that opportunity.
Are you in Desert Hot Springs?
Am I in Desert Hot Springs?
Yes.
The program is. Yes.
Yes. Okay. You're eligible.
Yeah. Edison Territory.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Right. Any questions? All right. Thanks, Jacob.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. We'll go on to our public comments on non-agenda items.
No.
All right. The next meeting will be on Thursday, May 8th. And the next executive committee meeting will be April 28th. Go ahead and adjourn. Thank you.